80. Sunday, nice.
Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
Hey, looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back, Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, and I'll be glad to get your phone calls on a First Amendment Friday. And we have a lot to talk about. Before I talk about this crazy thing that goes on involving affordable housing and the fact that we are told by the governor, told by the mayor of Portland, told by just about everybody in the region who's in politics that we are short of housing. And then we find out that an agency run by the city of Portland that costs tens of millions of dollars is not just running tens of millions of dollars upside down in the red. They've just lost their CEO because their CEO is taking a gigantic salary, but apparently also junketing around America about 2 months out of every 12. So she lost her job, although she got a giant golden parachute that I talked about earlier this week. But she was overseeing the management of 7,000 so-called affordable housing units. And how many of them are vacant right now and have been vacant for some time? About one quarter of all those units are vacant now and have been vacant for some time. So every time you hear a politician who says, well, you understand we're in a housing crisis, we're short of housing. Actually, I don't think we're short of housing at all. I've even said that I think we are short of housing. I think that is way too hard to build apartment units, is way too hard to build condominiums, and most of the too hard comes from government. It is not because of the private sector. I mean, the private sector has its own problems. Labor is expensive, and materials are expensive, and we understand that. But you really can't change much of that. But you know the most expensive part of building housing that you can control? The cost of government. Tens of thousands of dollars that you have to spend in government permits before you're even allowed to put a shovel in the ground. Now, I want to dig into that one and the incredible mismanagement of the housing agency that Portland runs, which is in charge of 7,000 so-called affordable housing units, which it turns out are not a whole lot more affordable than the private sector. In other words, the taxpayers are on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars. And in fact, the way that agency has been run, you're going to be on the hook for even more hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm not exaggerating the size of the problem. Because you see, under the so-called leadership of Ivory Matthews, the woman who was let go and given that $175,000 golden parachute, 6 months pay because she effectively got fired from the job because she was running around taking $100,000 worth of junkets everywhere in America, including most notably to Hawaii. She was doing such a bad job, she couldn't get people in a so-called housing crisis to be able to rent units at subsidized rates that are supposed to be below market. Now, I want to sort some of that out, and I'll dig into the details. First, welcome to First Amendment Friday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, as you know, naysayers always go to the head of the line, although we ask you to quickly get to the point you want to make where you disagree with me. I mean, about 30 years ago, I told one of my producers, we need to make sure that when people disagree with me, they get a chance to go first in line and make their argument as long as they're willing to stick around for a few questions from me. Now, sometimes that doesn't work out well for them. That's okay. But you are still allowed to go first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today. Should we end the now 100-year-old ban on buying handguns through the mail? My answer to that is yes. And the U.S. Postal Service is considering a brand new rule that takes effect. Now, there are 22 Democrat attorneys general. You can pretty well bet that Oregon and Washington are represented among those 22 knucklehead attorneys general. And they say, well, the Postal Service lacks the authority to override a law that bans the mailing of concealable firearms except by licensed dealers. The Department of Justice argued the 1927 law is unconstitutional and that the patchwork of state gun regulations makes it difficult for lawful gun owners to transport their firearms. I would agree with that notion. So get rid of the rule. Should we end the 100-year-old ban on mailing handguns? I would answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. By the way, the X poll found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. I do want to throw one thing out for your consideration. I have heard reports from people who know Chris Dudley better than I know Chris Dudley. And I know him through the show. He's been on the show before. He was on the show years ago when he first ran for governor. He was on the show more recently this year after he announced a run for governor. Lately, he's not been willing to come on. I think that's because I've endorsed Ed Deal, and I do think that Ed Deal is the best choice. Does that mean I think badly of Chris Dudley or Christine Drazen or David Medina or some of the other worthy candidates? I don't. But I just think the deal is the best deal. But in this case, I'd like to talk to Dudley, and here's why. I've been told by people who are very close to Chris Dudley that Tina Kotek offered him a job to keep him from running for office. Now, if you wonder, well, why would the governor of Oregon be interested in keeping Chris Dudley out of the race? At least on paper. It's not working out that way in the polls right now, but on paper, Dudley is the candidate who over the last 20 years has come the closest to beating the Democrat in the race for governor. So at least on paper, Dudley looked like a great opportunity. He came within about, I think, 22,000 votes of winning out of more than 1.5 million votes cast. So you'd say, well, he had a very good chance. So would Tina Kotek have had a benefit or earned a benefit by keeping Dudley out of the race? Yeah, she would have. And could she have offered him a position in government? I don't think Dudley's that concerned about the paycheck, but maybe Kotek thought if I offer him the chance to be part of the government for whatever salary he was going to get, that that will keep him out of the race. The answer is yes. Is that legal to do? The answer is absolutely not. It's called undue influence because Oregon, like most states, has a law that says you may not offer somebody anything of value. And by anything of value, you can't even offer a T-shirt because that has some value. You can't offer somebody anything in exchange for getting them to either vote or not vote, register or not register, run for office or not run for office. You're not allowed to do that. For example, if Joel Maha, one of my producers, said, Lars, I want to run for the legislature. And I said, I really want you to run. If you run for the legislature, I'll give you a big raise. That would be a Class C felony. I think that's what Tina Kotek has done. But I want to hear it directly from Chris Dudley. I don't want to hear it from his friends who tell me that he was offered a gig by Tina Kotek. I want to hear from Dudley himself. Did Tina Kotek commit a Class C felony and try to keep one of her competitors out of the race for governor? I'd love to know the answer, Chris. You're welcome on the show anytime. It's First Amendment Friday. Experience.
Speak now or forever hold your peace. 866 Hey Lars. That's 866 Hey Lars. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have? have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Hey, folks, can you even imagine the level of incompetence of the government here in the Pacific Northwest? In Portland, while we're supposedly critically short of housing, the city's affordable housing agency leaves 1,600 homes empty and does it for months. Home Forward's one-third of $1 million CEO gets fired for junketing off to Hawaii and everywhere else on the taxpayer's dime. In Seattle, the voter-approved funding for unsound transit, light rail, you know, falls $35 billion short. Now, that's billion with a B, $35 billion short. But those in charge of unsound transit, they have voted to build it anyway without the first clue as to where all that money is going to come from. They say they'll figure it out over the next 20 years. Both states spend the better part of $1 billion a year on the homeless. No one even seems to notice that the more money the government spends, the worse it gets. But the Democrat Party's favorite NGOs get a big pile of cash, so who really cares? The Interstate Bridge began, believe it or not, 21 years ago, is now up to almost $500 million spent without turning over a single shovel of dirt. And its director just quit not too many months ago after being paid almost $2 million over the last 5 years for that level of failure. Oregon and Washington still rank among the worst in America when it comes to crime, drugs, and school performance. And major brand name businesses are calling up the U-Haul trucks. And the band played on. I can only hope that Oregon's seriously flawed and fraudulent vote-by-mail system actually delivers a victory for GOP candidate Ed Deal. Glad to get your calls on a First Amendment Friday, 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. I got an email about one of this program's most notorious callers over the last three decades. Brian writes in from Bend, Oregon. Lars, I love you to death. You're a rock star. But you got to quit putting that Theodore nut job fruitcake on the air. It's just annoying at this point. Other than that, a fantastic job. We appreciate you, and we do love what you do. Mad love, signed Brian. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and you get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. This one comes in from Glenn in Canyonville. Lars, I'm confused. Free Enterprise, Spirit, and JetBlue were denied a merger that was under President Biden by the government. So, shouldn't the government offer some assistance for contributing to their demise? Senator Warren blames Donald Trump and high fuel prices. I thought the airlines bought their fuel a year in advance. My recommendation is for Pocahontas and Pothole Pete to apologize to all the employees who lost their jobs, or maybe spend some time on insider trading and stay out of other people's pockets. Signed, Glenn in Canyonville. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
By the way, have you noticed that in government, at least in the Northwest, it seems to be rules for thee and not for me? So, many people have complained about the high level of crime, about the low level of policing, about the low level of prosecutions, about the low level incarcerating bad guys. Well, guess what Multnomah County did about it? As detailed by the Daily Dead fish wrapper, Multnomah County spent about 7 years ago, they spent $1.6 million a year on security services. Now, that was bad enough. By the end of this current fiscal year, that spending will be almost 10 times that level, $14 million, including a third of $1 million just to pay for the security detail for the county chair, Jessica Vega Peterson. The massive leap in spending, a sign of the times. No, it's not. It's a sign that government has said, we don't care if the people get protection from the cops and the courts and the prisons and the jails. We just want protection for ourselves. Our best email of the day, but you can send more, comes from Kevin. You can send them to talk at LarsLarson.com. Lars, in the past few years, we have received 7 ballots in our mail for people who have never lived at our address. The Secretary of State of Washington is now running an internet ad campaign saying, in essence, trust us with your ballots. The elections are secure. As for the signatures, a banking story. When I was in my 30s, I went to cash a check at the bank that I'd been using for decades. Teller looked at the signature, said it didn't match the one on file. She would not cash the check. A manager was called over, agreed. The signatures do not match. I then asked to see the card with the signature, and I agreed. It didn't match, but I noted that I was 8 months old when it says I signed it. I signed a new card, and the check was cashed. Bottom line, signatures do change over time, whether for banks or for voter registration. To your calls now, I want to start with Ben West, who is a Clackamas County Commissioner. Commissioner West, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, Lars. I appreciate it.
So you're running for re-election. What have you told the voters that makes you worth re-election?
Well, I'm running against the same opponent that I beat 3.5 years ago, a progressive out of Lake Oswego, a trial attorney. Her name is Sonia Fisher. And since I've been elected in 2023, before it was popular, we saw public sentiment change. I uprooted and gutted DEI in Clackamas County. Yes, that's in the Portland area. We do not have a DEI department or administration. That was one of the first things I did. You may have heard that the mayor of Portland came before Clackamas County and asked for millions of dollars to deal with their unsheltered or homeless population. He came panhandling to neighboring jurisdictions.
Yep.
I told him right then and there that that was a no because we don't trust your city council or you to solve anything. I asked him tough questions around Home Forward and holding them accountable on those different aspects where we've seen chronic failure. So I'm just a different approach than my opponent, and I think this is a seat worth holding to continue to have pragmatic solutions.
I would agree with you. In fact, imagine how many other problems we could address with all the money that would be saved if you took all the woke counties and simply stopped DEI, even if you didn't stop any other waste at all. If you just stopped DEI, imagine how many more sheriff's deputies you could hire. Imagine how many more spaces in jail you could provide.
Yeah, you keep seeing these massive budget shortfalls and these big, huge, bloated administrative state and all this red tape and bureaucracy, and there's never a real conversation about reducing those things and making sure that we're being good stewards of every single taxpayer dollar that we have the honor to work with.
Absolutely right. That's Ben West. He's running for re-election, and it's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Something to say but don't want to talk? Email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to give you an example of a case, and then I want to talk to one of our favorite experts about this legal case, because it is absolutely horrific as far as I'm concerned, because it involves a man and involves a suspect. And as a result of this man, a mom is dead. And the man we're talking about had 24 prior arrests where charges kept getting dropped. And the DA in the case was actually warned explicitly by the police, this guy is a bomb waiting to go off. Well, the bomb did go off. And as I said, a mom is dead. So I thought we'd talk about it with Josh Marquis, who is the former VP of the National DA's Association. Josh, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Lars.
Tell me what we should make of this Virginia prosecutor, Steve Descano. What do you know about him?
Descano is what I call an anti-district attorney. He was elected, beat a real good prosecutor, a friend of mine, in full disclosure, named Ray Morrow, who was the elected DA in Fairfax County until just a few years ago. And then Soros, like he did in many places, ran this guy Descano as a quote progressive. Descano has just been laying waste to this very important county, which abuts on Washington, D.C. And there was a horrific murder very recently where a 40-year-old woman was murdered by a immigrant,
illegal alien,
legally from Sierra Leone.
Let's just call them what they are: illegal alien. Alien's a term of art in the law. Illegal means he's not here legally. I think that's perfectly good, even though I know most woke folks don't like it.
Well, the only alien, he's not, you know, it's not like from, you know, Area 51, but the guy is an alien. And Descano was specifically warned by area police agencies, this guy is super dangerous. But Descano was so intent on basically carrying out this super woke agenda that the Soros people are pressing, that he refused to do anything about this guy. And then, as you think pointed out, he exploded. Now, what is interesting is that, and as you know, and some of your listeners know from hearing me, not a big fan of Trump, but one of his best appointments is a woman named Harine Dillon, who is the Assistant Attorney General of the United States for Civil Rights. And she is now going after this bad DA for some of these things and is heading up a criminal investigation. It's one of those times when I think the Trump administration is absolutely right to be doing what they're doing.
Well, and Josh, one of the things I didn't really, I guess I could have thought generically it would be against the law, but is it legal for any prosecutor, whether federal or state prosecutor, to weigh what are called immigration consequences? And I've volunteered, Josh, that many years ago I had a producer who was a legal resident alien in the United States. It was a young lady. And she was a Canadian alien, but she was, we called her a Canalian, and she had a green card. But she told me on any number of occasions, boy, if I ever break the law, I can lose my green card altogether. But they've made it illegal for a DA to sit there and say, well, I would charge this person with a crime they appear to be guilty of, but if I do that, it will have an effect on their immigration status. It's literally illegal to consider the immigration consequences, isn't it?
Well, it is, and particularly in blue states. And the reason they've done that is essentially ultra-liberal legislators have wanted to make it so that you can't in any way consider it. Now, this is coming back to bite Descano, because essentially he was saying, I have to, you know, weigh the fact that this poor Sierra Leone refugee, which I guess just means anybody who enters the United States illegally, might get deported, and therefore I'm never going to prosecute him. Now, ironically, I think the feds do it differently, but of course, immigration is their bailiwick. In many states, there are laws that say the local prosecutor cannot even basically know about, or the police can't even know about immigration status. But the idea that in this case that he would basically give the guy a bonus for it is even more outrageous.
Well, let me ask you about this, too, because you're a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. But I understand that the Constitution affords that everybody has to be treated equally under the law. Can you treat people equally under the law? If, say, somebody committed the same crime as Abdul Jalla, the guy from Sierra Leone, but they're an American citizen, and they get charged with a full violation of the law. But Abdul does not, because of his immigration status. If you actually followed that as a practice, which it appears Steve Descano did, you would effectively say, I'm not going to treat everybody who's committed a crime or thought accused of committing a crime the same in my district, which is a violation of the constitutional rights of those people, isn't it?
Well, exactly, and that's why the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, liberals may not like it, but this is the flip side to what happened for a long time. The claim was, oh, well, you're treating this person differently because, let's say, they're from South America. Okay, well, the flip can be true, too. If you're providing special protections for somebody because they happen to be from a particular country or of a particular ethnicity or religion or race or whatever else, and you're basically then the person from the United States is going to get a harsher plea, yes, that's fundamentally violating their constitutional rights.
Kind of, as I said, it turns Americans into second-class citizens to illegal aliens. Last thing, and I want your thoughts on this, because you and I have been critical of George Soros for a long time. He put $600,000 into Descano's campaign fund. What is actually the agenda of George Soros other than to create chaos and crime and people hurt and killed in this country? Is there any other legitimate agenda to what he's been doing?
Well, as a former journalist, I'm sure Soros believes in what he's doing, however wrong-headed it is. And what he realized is that fairly cheaply, he could dramatically affect criminal justice policy, because most prosecutor races around the United States generally don't get anywhere near that kind of money in them. So he realized that he could actually really tweak law enforcement by simply getting involved.
But you answer that, but what is his agenda? What's he trying to achieve? Just a lawless America?
Anti-law enforcement. He doesn't want people to go to prison. He doesn't want the death penalty. He doesn't want mandatory sentencing. He basically is pro-criminal, if we're going to get right down to it.
And I guess there's nothing illegal about being pro-criminal. And if you're a billionaire, you can support pro-crime activities all day long. Josh, anything else to say about Descano before I let you go?
No, we would hope that the voters in Fairfax County would get rid of him. They had an epic prosecutor named Bob Aran for over 32 years. The man was just a legend, and it's just a shame that this is happening there.
Unfortunately, that's true. Josh Markey, the former vice president of the National DA's Association, talking about Steve Descano, the current, DA or prosecutor in Fairfax County in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Listen to Lars live? No problem. Get the podcast 24/7 at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network, where for almost 30 years, we've endeavored to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. This segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. In a moment, I want to talk about a really crazy situation in which public officials are actually discussing this idea. Should we allow hypodermic needles for use of illegal drugs to be distributed near elementary schools? The very fact that they even have to discuss that before they vote it down tells you a lot about the deficits in government in the Northwest right now. But I want to go first to Ray. Ray, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, and welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind today?
Thank you, Lars. Good to speak to you. It's almost fireworks season, and I have a real concern. As dry as it's been, and, I just don't think that we need to sell fireworks anymore. People are irresponsible. Where I live out here in South Salem, I've got fir trees and cedar trees. And every year it's like a war zone with these illegal fireworks from Washington that people are shooting all over. And if they get into these trees, it's going to crown and go down a whole entire block and cause all kinds of nightmares. And even last year, Lincoln City did a drone show as opposed to fireworks. But now this year, they're going back to fireworks. And, I saw concerts in the 70s. I'm an old man. And we had laser light shows. And I just don't understand why we don't have a laser light show or a fog machine or something like that and get away from all these fireworks. And you know what,
Ray, slow down a second. Here's the problem. I think I totally understand your concern. I have a concern, too. I've lived around, I don't have a house now that's surrounded by trees, but I have had houses in the past that have been surrounded by trees. I have the same concern about fireworks. But here's my concern. Part of what you said contradicted part of what you said. And let me suggest it this way. You said, we've got to make it illegal to have any kind of fireworks at all, but our biggest problem is the use of illegal fireworks, which are obtained illegally and fired off illegally. Does that suggest that adding more statutes or adding more rules and regulations is not going to solve the problem if people are going to break the rules anyway, because you just made it clear your house was put in danger of a potential fire in the trees by people who bought fireworks, illegally brought them into Oregon, and then illegally lit them off. So how does one more law solve the problem?
Well, I'm not sure, but I can tell you that I know that there's eco freaks out there July 4th night lighting off fireworks with their kids, and then the next day they're hollering about the environment and all the pollution in the air and stuff. You can't have it both ways.
No, but you understand that when it comes to Democrats and liberals, they have to have double standards, because if they didn't have double standards, they'd have no standards at all. I mean, they don't seem to see the problem. With that, I mean, on almost a daily basis, Ray, I'm pointing out things that were said by liberals 5 years ago and completely contradicted 5 years later. Sometimes it only takes 5 months for them to contradict themselves. And I try to watch for the same thing in myself. If I decide to stand up for something, I guess I'm just concerned that I'm more tired. As much as I understand there's a real physical danger in your case when it comes to fireworks in your home, I'm concerned about a society that is increasingly hemmed in by rules on all sides. I mean, it's like we're like living in one of the worst HOAs you've ever encountered, where everybody gets to make a rule against something that bugs them. And pretty soon you have rules against everything. Do you think our society, I mean, there's a certain level of rules that I think you have to have any kind of society. You've got to set some guardrails. But should we set them up in as minimal a way as we can? Or do you think we're all better off the more rules that we're under? Because, Ray, every single year, the legislature in Oregon, the legislature in Washington, and the Congress, they write brand new laws that hem everything in, and then next year they're going to write some more. I mean, it sounds like we're all caught up in a kind of big crazy quilt of laws in every direction. Do you think it's actually making our life better or worse?
Well, I'm thinking it leans more towards the worse with some of these laws. And I know that there's church groups and Boy Scouts that sell fireworks to help fund whatever. But whatever happened to just having a car wash, you know? I just don't, you know, and my son was in Iraqi Freedom from 04 to 08. And the first couple of years he came home, and the fireworks, he had a little trouble with all the M80s and all the booms going off.
I don't doubt it.
He's doing better now.
It's a tough road to hoe for an awful lot of veterans, but I appreciate his service. Ray, thanks very much. Glad to have you on. It is First Amendment Friday. Let me go to John, who's a naysayer. Hey, John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind and what do we disagree about?
Okay, I'm really angry at you the other day for calling Christine Drazen a liar.
She is.
I know Christine. I didn't vote for her. I voted for Ed Deal. But Christine is not a rhino. I followed her legislative session on email.
Your phone's breaking up, but John, I got your point. I mean, you're saying she's not a rhino, but there are a number of conservative issues, including gun issues, on which Drazen has been too soft for many of us who are conservatives. Would you agree?
I don't think she's been too soft. The fact is, she's a Second Amendment person. You know, she's going to be the nominee.
But you can say that, but then when a bill comes up in the legislature and you, in the leadership of the legislature, have the ability to stop the bill, and you can stop it a number of different ways, and you decide not to do it, you decide to go along and get along, to me, that's a rhino, isn't it to you?
Look, you can't call somebody a rhino based on just one issue. You can't. And you use rhino too often. And there are rhinos out there. And I'll say Lisa Murkowski, Alaska, is probably.
And she is a rhino. And Susan Collins of Maine, she's a rhino too. I agree with you.
You throw the rhino term around too cavalierly.
Actually, this week I think is the first time I've used the word rhino in 6 months. So if I'm using it too often by using it a couple of times a year.
Chris, here's the deal, Lars. She is going to win the primary. She is. The polls have indicated that. They tell me the polls aren't always right. She's going to win. She's going to be the nominee. 100% if we want to not see a coach at Kaepernick.
Okay, you may be right. We'll see after May 19th. And, John, thanks
for the Lars Larson Show. The information you need when you want it. FM News 101 KXL is Portland's number one source for news and information. KXL FM, Portland, Vancouver, Salem.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump says Ukraine and Russia have agreed to observe a three-day truce starting tomorrow and a mutual swap of 1,000 prisoners each. Trump posts on social media that the short truce would hopefully be the beginning of the end of a very long, deadly, and hard-fought war. Also, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky orders his army not to attack Red Square during Russia's May 9th parade. CBS's Olivia Rinaldi.
This military parade will be held without Russian military hardware due to the threat of Ukraine's long-range drones. This is really becoming a story about the strength of drone warfare, how it has increased across the world as we've been seeing it play out in Iran, but now inside of Russia.
The latest jobs report beats expectations, with employers adding 115,000 positions in April. National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett on Bloomberg.
A rip-roaring jobs market, and it's completely consistent with what we saw with the claims data just a few days ago, right? Like, initial claims for unemployment insurance right now are the lowest since we've ever been counting them, all the way back to the 1960s. And so the job market is really, really, really strong.
The unemployment rate remains at 4.3%. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, in Rome for a two-day diplomatic mission, tells reporters so far there has not been a response from Iran to the American one-page memorandum of understanding aimed at restarting peace talks.
Iran now claims that they own, that they have a right to control an international waterway. They claim that they have a right to control it. What is the world going to do about that?
President Trump says the U.S.-Iran ceasefire is still in effect, but he warns the U.S. will, quote, knock them out a lot harder and a lot more violently if Tehran doesn't accept a peace deal. A CBS News analysis finds that thousands of asylum seekers are giving up on their cases amid the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. CBS's Allison Keyes.
CBS News has learned that the Trump administration's efforts to deport those seeking asylum to third countries have led thousands to drop their cases or agree to voluntarily leave the U.S. This after the Board of Immigration Appeals ruled in the fall that judges should decide on motions for third country removal before considering whether someone qualifies for asylum. Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
The Pentagon has begun releasing new files on UFOs. CBS's Camille McCormick.
The Pentagon released the files, but the effort is also being led by the White House and Director of National Intelligence, among others. The Pentagon said in a post on X that President Trump is focused on providing maximum transparency, but Americans can ultimately make up their own minds. It also says additional documents will be released on a rolling basis.
Stocks close up on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Every Sunday, moderator Margaret Brennan goes face-to-face with top leaders to make you better informed. Face the Nation, Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount.
To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
Hey, looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday. This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back, Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails on a First Amendment Friday. If you want to join what we've always called the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Our poll on X today, should we end the 100-year ban on mailing handguns through the U.S. Postal Service? I would say yes. get rid of the limitation. You can still enforce the laws. You'll find the poll on X at Lars Larson Show and also at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program John Lee, who is state representative. He represents a District 18 position too. And I want to talk about a subject that's become a familiar one on this show, although almost every week there's a new development in what ranks as the single biggest public works project in all of the Pacific Northwest. The last time we had something like that, whoops, way back in the day, it was a giant multi-billion dollar mess. And I would say the Interstate Bridge Project is not much smaller. In fact, it's grown. It has become an insane level mess, but we find out new and terrible things about it almost every week. And John has a brand new development to talk about today. John, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me on. A good citizen did a public records request, and we just found out this week that for his 5.5 years of boondoggle work on the IBR, former program administrator Greg Johnson was paid nearly $2 million. His salary ranged from just under $200,000 in his first half year up to $426,000 his final year here. It's an outrage when you
and all this for failing in the job. Is it fair to say that his leadership of that project, which has now grown to a low of $15 billion, may even be $18 billion, and may not even ever be built, literally, was not exactly a success story, was it?
No, it's a nightmare, and the whole program is in chaos. They don't have the money, and so as you alluded to, they're now going to phase the project. They don't even have enough money to build the first phase of the light rail project in search of a bridge, but they're going to include the path for light rail and without any trains on it, and that path is going to end 90 feet above the ground at the Vancouver waterfront. And they say if they can find the money, that transit component, which used to be $2 billion, is now $3.5 billion. And that's a 1.83-mile light rail extension, so you're looking at about $1.9 billion a mile. Truly an outrage, my friend.
And by the way, the other piece of the outrage might be this, because I think even Bob Ferguson with construction paper and crayons could connect the dots here. They hire Greg Johnson. He gets this gigantic payoff, almost $2 million bucks over 5.5 years, and his former employer, a company called WSP, was hired on under his leadership as the general engineering consultant. Their first contract was $44 million. It exploded more than sevenfold to more than $300 million. Now, was that a coincidence that his former employer ends up getting a gigantic increase of sevenfold in the amount of money they're making from the project that their former employee was heading up?
Sadly, no, my friend. Both ODOT and WashDOT do a ton of business with WSP. And what I don't know is this type of outrageous contract being amended over and over again and exploding compensation the norm, or is it just abnormal to the IBR? One of the things we discovered was that in that contract, they both WashDOT and ODOT appear to guarantee WSP a 32% profit for all their failed work. It's truly a ripoff of taxpayers.
It sure sounds like it. Now, here's the other piece to it, and I don't know if you, I suspect you agree with Bob Ortblad, the consultant, but he's the guy who has said that there are about eight different reasons that this project cannot proceed legally, and one of them is the environmental impact statement. Of course, here in the politically correct Northwest, you've got to have an EIS. Only the EIS was written for the whole project, the $15 to $18 billion project. Now that they propose to build the first phase when they may never even reach the second phase, isn't that EIS just a bunch of waste paper at this point?
Yeah, there were over 10,000 pages of just giving BS answers to citizens' legitimate concerns, and that's a problem in and of itself. But it was Joe Courtwright, the economist from Portland, that gave eight reasons that the
whole project.
Yeah, and it now fails federal standards on many levels. And it we would only hope that DOT Secretary Sean Duffy and his team come in and say this is out of control cost-wise and in no longer complying with federal guidelines. It's time to pull the plug and stop the bleeding.
Well, and didn't Courtright point out, and I'm sorry I misidentified as Bob Ortblad, but Courtright pointed out some of what is supposed to ameliorate or you know, diminish the environmental impact is the stuff in phase two. But if you only build phase one, they don't let you get away with that, do they? Where you say, yeah, we're going to have a big impact on the environment, but we'll fix that in phase two. Well, are you ever going to build phase two? We don't know. Maybe we'll only build phase one and phase two will never happen. Well, then that's automatically a no, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And a different aspect of this, an awful lot of the environmental benefits, quote unquote, were because so many people, they alleged, were going to get out of their cars and ride the transit. Well, they created very false transit ridership numbers, something on the order of 26 to 33,000 daily riders, when currently we have less than 1,000 using transit over the Columbia River on the I-5. So that in and of itself was in essence a lie or a huge falsehood that they knew wouldn't stand ultimate scrutiny. So even the environmental benefits are fake, according to what the IBR proposed, if they delivered both phases. And with both states broke, Oregon especially, but both Oregon and Washington, there's no money to build the second phase, and they're going to have to find an extra $1.5 billion or so to finish phase one, and that's not guaranteed by any stretch.
I'm talking to State Representative John Lee from District 18, Position 2. And John, one of the things you've been pointing out for some time now is that crazy transit stop 80 feet off the ground at the Vancouver waterfront. I keep waiting because this does happen on my show. I'll warn people about something, as you've been warning people for years, and they don't get excited about it till it actually happens. I mean, I'm imagining that it's someday, if they go ahead and build this mess, despite the fact that it's illegal, despite the lack of funding, that at some point somebody's going to say, you've got a transit stop that's the height of an 8-story building, and you got to either walk up to it or take one of those always broken elevators that TriMet seems to specialize in. And you go, yeah, we warned you about it for years, and you never said a word about it. John, thanks for the update. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday. Your phone calls and emails, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
National, Lars has you covered. Call him from anywhere. 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Congresswoman Porter, your thoughts on the idea of funding health care for undocumented immigrants statewide?
Yes.
Yes, and
that's, by the way, what I think Californians deserve as answers to these questions.
That is Katie Porter, currently a member of Congress and not exactly an admired member. She is most infamous for pouring a pot of burning hot potatoes on her ex-husband's head. But she is now running for governor of California. And her argument during that debate this week was, well, Californians want to pay for the medical care costs of illegal aliens. I mean, that's the kind of insanity that the Democrat Party really represents. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. There was a lot of crazy going on this week, and I want to get into some of those, but it is First Amendment Friday, so I want to take your calls as well. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today, you can find it at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com. Should we end the post office's 100-year-old ban on mailing handguns? I would answer that one yes. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show. Let me go first to Bill. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, big guy. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I was wondering about the redistricting. I understand what happened in Virginia, and I believe there's another state or two that...
Indiana's another one where redistricting was a major issue, and Donald Trump had to put his foot down, and about five Republicans found out what happens when the president puts his foot down. They lose.
Oh, I love that. I love that. But what I'm curious about is other states that have redistricted, you know, have redistricted, can't even say the word. You understand?
Yes,
now,
I get it.
States that have race-based redistricting. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't say it. Anyway, other states that have done race-based, are they under the microscope? Is there a chance that they?
Yes, they are. Because, for instance, Louisiana got shot down by the U.S. Supreme Court. Even the liberals on the court said, you're not allowed to draw a district so that you carefully draw around as many black people as you can. That would also apply to brown people or Asian people or even white people. You couldn't say, we want to make this district all white people or mostly white people. The Supreme Court finally is getting built to what I think you and I were told our whole lives that America aspired to, and that was a color-neutral society. In which nobody gets hired for a job because they're white. Nobody gets denied a job because they're black. Nobody gets granted entry to a school because they're black or because they're not black. You know, so if you have a race neutral policy, the Supreme Court has said you can district that way, but you can't go out and say, we want to make sure that black voters have the greatest chance of electing a black candidate, usually a Democrat, although these days, oftentimes, black candidates, the best ones, are Republicans. And you say, well, hold on, are you allowed to do it based on a racial basis? I think any child could tell you, you shouldn't make decisions based on skin color. I mean, can you imagine a kid who came home and said, Mom and Dad, I got some great new friends, but there were a couple of people I will not be friends with because they're black. What would any reasonable mom or dad or grandma or granddad say to a kid who made that comment? You say, so you're making your friends based on whether they're white or whether they're black? Don't do that. You know, make friends based on who the people are that you want to be friends with and forget about what their skin color is. Wouldn't that be a reasonable answer?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, yeah, sir, I'd like to make one comment before I go.
Please do.
I'm 62 years old, and in my lifetime, I always wondered what would happen if we ever had a president or a government that was actually working for the people. And I have been energized by what's going on in our country right now. And I've got a 25-year-old son. I'm trying to tell him to be patient. I'm like, buddy, I really believe things are going to get better in a way that I've never seen in my lifetime.
You know, I think you're right, and Bill, if I can add to this, I'm not trying to speak for you, but I know that I'm mad when I have to fill up with $6 gas as well, or $5.50 gas in my neck of the woods, but California is worse. But are there times where you occasionally pay more for something for a short period of time to achieve something, a greater good? When it comes to American national security, I would say that letting Iran get nuclear weapons is something that we have said cannot be allowed to happen and will be dangerous, not just to the Middle East, but to the rest of the world. Is it? And if I had to ask you this, let's say we've got this resolved with Iran. They're right on the edge of falling apart right now. And if this is resolved by early, say, by the middle of summer, and gas prices, I'm told by the experts, are going to drop fairly quickly the minute we know that that conflict is over, will it have been worth a few months of paying more, 50% more, for gasoline to achieve that end?
Absolutely. You kidding me? Iran having, you know, it just can't happen.
Okay, and because, Bill, does your son ever aspire to own a house?
Yes.
Then you've raised him right. But guess what? The year that he buys the house, he's going to say, Dad, this year is going to be horrible because I've got the down payment. I've got the closing costs. I'm going to have my moving costs. This year, my housing is going to cost a lot more than it ever has before. And if he doesn't understand this already, but you've raised him right, sounds like you will, you'll be able to say to him, yes, but son, next year you'll have the deduction on your taxes, those initial expenses are over, and you will know that potentially for the next 30 years, your housing costs will stay the same number of dollars, even as everybody else's rent goes up. And if your son understands that and says, so I'm going to have a short-term pain for a long-term gain, he will understand that implicitly. He may even do what I've done before, Bill. There was a point in my career where I was making, at that time, the most money I'd ever made, $30,000, $15 an hour. And I quit that job to take a job in television. I went from $30,000 a year to $18,000 a year. And believe me, at the time, I looked at it and I said, well, I hope this bet pays off. And you know what? It did. I mean, I got tired of television, but the point is the short-term pain was worth the long-term gain. I think that's going to be true of what we're doing with Iran. And only Donald Trump, every other president has said, we can't let Iran get nuclear weapons. Donald Trump is the only one who's been willing to say, and we will make it happen.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars Larson Show on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I know that Americans do not trust big technology, but I think when it comes right down to it, they trust Washington, D.C. even less when it comes to protecting your kids from the kind of threats they might meet online. So, I wanted to get Sean Stevens on. Sean is the chief researcher at the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, otherwise known as FIRE. Sean, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me, Lars.
So tell me this. There's a brand new poll out that finds that if Americans want anyone to watch over their children's browsing online, it's mom and dad and not Big Brother and social media companies. I got to tell you something. I'm really gratified by that result because I think it should be mom and dad that are the primary watchdogs. What should we make of that?
I don't think it's very surprising. The other group of individuals that people preferred over the federal government and the tech companies were teachers. They weren't as popular as parents, but it's kind of like, wait, individuals I know, I trust more. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And in fact, should we have the government involved to any great extent? I mean, maybe a little bit on the fringes, but does the government really have a role in deciding how to police social media? Because my impression of the government even before the pandemic was government likes one-size-fits-all kinds of guardrails. And they'll just say, okay, we're throwing up a giant wall around this. And you say, hold on, we don't need a giant wall. We need some guardrails. And the government's attitude is, well, no, we have to have one solution that fits all different variations of this problem. And the government never can find a way to fine tune it, but individuals can do a very good job of that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think there are some things that the government and the companies should regulate. I mean, there's like child pornography. You probably want to gate pornography. Other things that are open discussions of committing crimes maybe should be things like that that aren't protected by the First Amendment should be things that you should try to regulate. But I don't think you can have this one size fits all thing to regulating expression between human beings on the internet. A lot of things are going to be on like a case by case basis that you really have to review the specific details of.
Well, and you gave one of the clearest examples because it is an absolute. I mean, when it comes to child pornography, it is absolutely forbidden to produce it. It's absolutely forbidden to sell it or to buy it or to possess it or to transfer it. Where you have an absolute like that, yeah, government guardrails work out great. But even when you say what's covered under the First Amendment, if you say, well, you can't discuss crimes. Well, I see people discussing abortion all the time online. And frankly, I think killing babies is a criminal act. But people discuss it all the time. So the minute you start to draw boundaries, you say, well, you can't talk about things that are immoral. And you say, you mean like killing babies? And then all of a sudden you've got a big discussion between people who think it's only moral to allow killing babies and those of us who don't think you should be able to kill them at all.
Yeah, and there are, you know, I'm a researcher. I have a PhD, not an attorney, but there are court rulings that deal specifically with the abortion issue. So there is First Amendment, like, what case law on that. And so, yeah, I would just basically be saying we should largely be following that, which leaves most expression, you know, it's basically saying stay out of most of the expression online and let individuals, you know, regulate themselves. And we have pretty clear examples of where the guardrails are and what the exceptions are. And yes, there might be some gray areas, but we should have those discussions.
You know, one of the things I don't understand, Sean, is this. I mean, there have been industries that have said, why don't you let us do self-regulation and we'll set some standards? And I would think with, you know, if it's trust but verify, say, okay, go ahead, set your own limits and basically police your own industry. I would think that social media companies, if they want to avoid having the government come in and tell them what to do, and I don't think the users want the government telling them what to do, that the social media companies themselves would say, we're going to be the gold standard. We'll be the good housekeeping seal of approval standard for social media. And if anybody wants to be allied with us, then they can have those same kind of standards. And if you want to be out on the fringes, then everybody will know, yeah, don't trust those folks. They don't have any guardrails.
Yeah, you know, I think there's this might get a little bit beyond the bounds of talking about free expression a little bit, but they some of those big companies might have some other interests into welcoming some government regulation into their industry because it might allow them to box out, you know, upstart competitors.
Yep. Well, and it, you know, because I think back, I mean, it's before my time, and I know it's before your time, Sean, but the meat industry used to be notoriously bad in America. And then there were companies saying, hey, put some regulations on us because we do a good job of, you know, packaging meat or, you know, slaughtering, you know, animals and producing meat products. And all these other fly by night folks, they're the ones that are the problem. But I know that part of their agenda was box our competition out. And they liked that idea a lot. Although, you know, the other companies were free to produce a good quality product or not. And I wouldn't have a problem with boxing out the people who can't maintain their own quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, another example in the realm here, which might, you know, it's more on the other side of maybe it is a little bit of a risk, is, you know, we've to pivot back to free expression and a lot of what FIRE does.
Yeah.
We kind of let colleges and universities self-police themselves on this matter for a long time. And now the backlash is occurring in the form of harsher government regulation of speech on campus. And while I have plenty of concerns about that, there's also a little element of you did bring some of this on yourself by not self-policing very well.
Yeah, that's what they did, except that it seemed as though all the colleges went wrong in the same direction. Should we be suspicious of that?
Yeah. Well, when the mistakes all you know, point in one direction, I think there's some things to consider there for sure. I would say there's lots of mistakes in one direction, but there are, you know, FIRE does this every day, and there's plenty of examples of, you know, more left of center speech also being centered on campus, even though right of center speech probably is targeted with more zeal and more often.
Well, and you and I both know, I mean, I've had plenty of friends who are conservatives and they're activists as conservatives, and they'll go to give a speech on campus. Mm-hmm. They'll be shouted down. They'll be physically threatened, you know, with expulsion. And yet American college campuses are completely friendly to all the terrorists out there who say, oh, no, we're in favor of all kinds of radical things. And the colleges say, you folks are welcome. But the other folks, those folks better stay off campus. That's Sean Stevens from FIRE, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Beep.
take a peek inside Lars's studio, follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, and in a moment, I want to tell you about a public high school that is throwing a graduation ceremony, only it's a segregated graduation ceremony. It is only for black students, not for white students, not for Hispanic students. I'll get into the details of that in just a moment. First, though, welcome to First Amendment Friday. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. And on that note, Jason joins us on First Amendment Friday. Hey, Jason, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I just had a few things to say about Teflon Don and my thoughts on the Iran conflict so far. If you place economic sanctions on the country or on the civilian population that caused the riots and causes the unrest to begin with, and then you go in and you try to punish the leadership for retaliating against the populace, it's like setting up, it's like leading them to the battle, you know. It's like setting them
up for, since you're making me guess, Jason, are we talking about Iran?
Yeah.
Okay, but hold on. You're saying because we started doing what we're doing with Iran now is why they've had civil unrest and an unhappy population. Except I hate to let facts get in the way of a good liberal opinion, but in Iran, there were lots and lots of massive protests that happened when President Obama was president about 15 years ago. And all of the public opinion polling I've seen out of Iran says the people of Iran are not happy at all with their local leadership. Now, that's not the reason for the United States to go after them. The reason for the United States to pursue Iran is to keep them from getting the kind of weapons that both Democrats and Republicans in America say we can't afford to let Iran get nuclear weapons. And there have been prominent Democrats who said it as well. But here's the problem. You start with the premise that we caused the civil unrest because of the actions against Iran, except the civil unrest has been going on in Iran by an unhappy population for at least the last 20 years.
And the nuclear research has been going on since the 1950s, and they got the research.
Hold on. Is there a difference between nuclear research and actual production of weapons-grade uranium? Because there is a big difference, isn't there?
No, there is a big difference. You can do lots of different things with nuclear
Jason. If you have uranium and you enrich it to about 6%, do you know what it works really well for? Civilian production of electricity, which Iran says that's what we're doing. Except their production of uranium has taken it to 60%, which means it's a short jump from 60% to 90% pure. Do you know what 90% uranium is good for? Weapons. Is it good for nuclear power production?
Right.
It is not.
So are you concurring that we gave them their nuclear technology after World War II?
Would I agree that Iran under the Shah got the nuclear production technology? The position of the United States toward Iran ever since 79 and the hostage crisis has been Iran is the biggest sponsor of terrorism on planet Earth. So whatever was done or not done under governments that existed in the 50s that by the late 1970s did not exist anymore, what's the relevance of those two?
Well, there's not really much relevance, but the nuclear option in Iran, he's been hinting that he wants to nuke Tehran. I mean,
no, hold on. When has Donald Trump said he might nuke Tehran? If you wanted to say he's hinted at it, tell me what Donald Trump has done or said that hints that we might nuke Tehran.
I'm not quoting Donald Trump. I'm just saying it's hinting towards the fact that they want to nuke.
Who is hinting we might nuke Tehran? Tell me who.
Just the other night they said it's going to make it look like it's going to glow at night.
Well, there are lots of things that are kinetic attacks that would make something glow other than nuclear weapons. But are you suggesting that Donald Trump has hinted he may nuke Tehran? Because I haven't heard anything of the kind.
Well, that's where the leadership is underneath Tehran in bunkers, that are nuclear.
Oh, I'm sure the leadership is leaving the civilian population on top. But Jason, let's go back to this. Is Iran the biggest sponsor of terrorism on planet Earth?
Sustainably over the last 40 years or so, probably.
Almost 50 years, yeah. Okay, so we've agreed they back terrorism, they fund terrorism, they equip terrorists. They equipped the terrorists for October 7th. They've equipped the Hamas. They've equipped the Houthis. They've equipped Hezbollah. So they're terrorists. Should they ever be allowed to get nuclear weapons with that in mind?
No, of course not.
Okay, so, and has every president talked about keeping Iran away from nuclear weapons? I mean, Clinton did, Obama did, even Biden did, and Trump has. Has any American president till Trump actually taken action that would keep them from getting nuclear weapons?
Yeah, they have. It only makes sense. You know,
well, hold on.
Other than
Trump, Jason, which other president took any actions that actually prevented them from enriching uranium and creating a nuclear weapon? Tell me the name.
Didn't HW do that?
No. They all talked about it, Jason. They all talked about it. But nobody actually took the action to say, if you try to do this, we're going to pound your nuclear program into a big bunch of rubble under a mountain. And if you keep it up, then we're going to go in and take more actions to make sure that you agree never have nuclear weapons. Now, Jason, after World War II, what did we tell Japan? Japan wrote their own constitution and said, we will no longer have offensive capabilities, because prior to World War II, Japan had been expansionist. They tried to expand into China. They tried to expand into Korea. They were a war-making country. After World War II, has Japan been a well-behaved national entity?
They're stuck in the 50s. They haven't.
Well, they're not. I mean, their economy has had both good years and bad, or good decades and bad decades.
Ahead of us by about 30 years.
But have they been? Well, their economy is kind of in the doldrums right now because they don't. Their economy is not growing. But other than that, Jason, have they tried to make war on anybody else?
They've been capitulated.
They've been what? I don't even know what that word means. But Jason, maybe you know what it means. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. It's a First Amendment Friday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network throughout the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, providing honestly provocative talk. And these days, we're live on television, too. Hey, Portland CW, that's KRCW, and thanks a lot for watching there as well. I think that when it comes to the primary election in Oregon, although I'm not an Oregon voter, I've been asked, well, who would you support if you were an Oregon voter? I vote in Washington State, so I'm under the thrall of all the craziness in Washington State, including the state Supreme Court that says, no, you're not allowed to vote on things, citizens. Only lawmakers are allowed to do that. They represent you. But people asked, and so I said, Ed Deal is the guy. Now, do I get anything for that? No, I don't want anything for that. I'm just telling you what my choice would be. So, are we going to see, on the 19th of May, Oregonians pick the first Republican to be able to beat a Democrat? And in this case, I think Tina Kotek is more than beatable. I think that she needs to be removed. Even her own party is unhappy with her. And she doesn't have anything she can point to and actually say, I fulfilled that promise, or I solved that problem. In fact, almost every problem she identified as things that she said she would take on as governor of the state of Oregon, elected on stolen FTX cryptocurrency, illegally donated to the Democrat Party, she hasn't done anything. In fact, almost everything has gone backwards. So I wanted to bring on Jim Passero. Jim is a principal at the public affairs company called Third Century Solutions. And Jim, it's good to have you back on the program.
Well, thanks, Lars. I'm also a former KXL weekend radio host.
How about that on our flagship station in Portland? So I'm glad to hear that as well. What should we make of the primary election? And is Ed Deal going to be the choice of Republicans in the state of Oregon to represent them in the November general election?
I don't know if that's going to be the choice, but I think he's the best Republican candidate that's run for governor in 30 years. He reminds me so much of Vicatia. He's the depth and training and articulation and the heart that he brings forward on issues is I was not expecting this. I was expecting to vote for Chris Dudley, and I like all the candidates, but when I watched him campaign and what he's done in this state and his level of talent as an engineer with 2 degrees from Stanford with the personality that he has, I'm overwhelmed. We have a chance to change this state with such a talented candidate, and yet he's got one third the money that Christine Drazen has and Chris Dudley has. And I really feel like spanking the grassroots in Oregon because, you know, we talk and talk and talk, and then we have a terrific candidate, and he, you know, he's only raised $600,000-$700,000 compared to their $2.3 million. And it's like, you know, I think he's going to win, but I know he would win if he had been properly funded. And I, you know, you've done a good job endorsing him, but are people just asleep right now? I mean, gathered 250,000 signatures in a month. I don't know if people can appreciate a leader anymore. Their attention spans are too worn down, and they don't, and I sound like a school mom, they don't read anymore. And it's just like all of a sudden somebody comes to, would you agree? We've been through a lot of candidates, Lars, you and I have.
We
over
have.
The last 20 years, and there were a lot of successful people, but they were very mediocre politicians, very mediocre in talent. And Ed is just, there's just a big difference between what he's got and the people we've run before. Would you agree
with
that?
Ed connects with people in a way that the others do not. And frankly, look, I've got nothing bad to say about Chris Dudley, although I'm a bit disappointed that the minute, people have been asking me, who do you think is the best candidate? And I think there's nothing or few things more useless than a talk show host who doesn't have an opinion on a current subject of discussion. You've got to give somebody. And so I said, okay, I think it's Deal in looking at all three of them. And again, Dudley is the one who came numerically the closest to beating a Republican, but did not.
Right.
Now, I don't know how much of that is the flawed voting system in Oregon, which I think is fraudulent, but that doesn't matter. What does matter is he came very close. And in fact, I wanted to ask you about something because I know some people who are quite close to Chris Dudley who've told me that Kotek went to Dudley in the fall of last year before he jumped in and allegedly offered him, I'll give you a position in government. I don't think he's worried about a paycheck. I think he's, but he may want to be in a position of influence. If Kotek did that, you know, she committed, if she did that, and I haven't heard it from Dudley himself yet, but I've asked him to come on the show in the last couple of days saying, I've heard this story. People have been telling me you were offered a gig by Tina Kotek. If she did, that is a Class C felony under Oregon state law. That means she broke the law, which could be a game changer in and of itself. Even if Dudley is not where he needs to be in the polls to be able to win the race, and even if he may not get the nomination, if he were to go public with that story and tell me on the air, I was offered a job by Tina Kotek to stay out of the race. That's a criminal offense by Tina Kotek that I think even the current attorney general, that insurance shyster who's the attorney general, would have to take notice of, wouldn't he?
Yes, but that's not what's in Chris's heart. I mean, Chris has got, what a great guy, and he wants to change and save Oregon, and that's what he's focused on. So I've heard the rumors, too. I probably think they're true, but Chris is, you know, he wants to save Oregon, and I helped encourage him to run, and then I met Ed Deal. I feel like, you know, I left him at the altar. You know, I'm a turncoat. But I, when you meet a candidate of this talent, and again, I cannot believe that everybody listening, you know, do your part. Send him $25 or $50. I mean, this is ridiculous.
I agree.
That we would let somebody this talented. And I don't want to hear from the grassroots anymore about this or that or this or that if they're not going to spend $25 on that deal. Because he's working so hard and he has so much talent, and it's up to us to open our eyes and see it, because I want to live in the Oregon that Ed Deal lays out and envisions. That's the state I want to live in. And we knew at one time under Vicatia, his imagination and what he did when he went to Japan and he brought 200 companies and he created a television show and brought Oregon back to life in the 1980s. Ed's got the talent to do that again. That's exactly where we are. But, you know, the citizens have got to do their part.
Yeah, they
and
do.
So,
Jim,
yeah,
all I'm suggesting is that if Dudley gets past the primary and does not get
right.
it, he needs to go public with that story. He needs, because if you say we have a governor who was elected on $500,000 in stolen money, and it was stolen, and then it was illegally donated to the Democrat Party of Oregon, and if that got her elected, and I've been harping on that ever since, and nobody was ever prosecuted for breaking the law, and if Dudley knows that she broke the law again and tried to sabotage an election by offering somebody a job, she broke a law. It is specifically illegal to offer anybody anything of value in exchange for not running for office. That is Jim Passero. Jim is with Third Century Solutions. He said Ed Deal is the real deal, and I agree with him. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Well, those.
This is your home for honestly provocative talk radio. The truth every day. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network in Portland, CW. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And naysayers always go to the head of the line on the Lars Larson Show. Almost 30 years of doing that. The poll on X today. Should we end the 100-year-old ban on mailing handguns? Now, a couple of you have emailed and said, well, what about rifles? Handguns were banned from being sent through the mail about 100 years ago. Now the U.S. Postal Service is considering overriding that 1927 federal law. I'd say, yeah, make it easier for law-abiding people to buy guns or send them through the mail. The Poll on X is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. I'm going to start with Doug. Hey, Doug, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. I'm just considering who to vote for governor. I've kicked it around between Ed Deal and Christine Drazin and what's the trailblazer's name?
Chris Dudley.
Yeah. Chris Dudley, that's him. I'm torn up between whether to go with Dudley or not, due to the fact that he did drop out of the race back a few years ago.
No, he didn't drop out. He ran to the end, and he came very close to winning. He came within about 22,000 votes of winning. He lost to John Kitzhaber.
Okay. Oh, I was under the understanding that he dropped out there at the last minute when they were counting all the final votes to figure it out. Okay.
But tell me this. If you're trying to make the decision between the three, and I've endorsed Ed Deal, so I've got a dog in the fight. Sorry, Ed. Ed's not a dog, but, you know, What's the criteria for which you what do you want to see out of a governor that's going to guide your decision?
I would like to see a governor who would actually stand up and work for the public as far as taxes, reducing taxes, running the government like it should be and not making your own bank account look a lot.
They're all going to say they're going to do that. Do you see any indication among the three that you mentioned? Dave Medina is the fourth candidate, but I think David's kind of out of the running at this point. Yeah. But which one do you think will take the stronger stance when it comes to reinvigorating the economy, getting the government out of the way, and reducing taxes?
Well, I think Ed's got a better platform. He's been talking a little clearer about it. Christine's had her shot as governor. Chris has had his shot. Let's see how Ed does with it. Let's see what can happen with him.
Sounds like you've made a decision. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Chris Christensen, who's running for Metro president. Chris, you heard me talking about that crazy bridge project that is now 21 years along, $500 million spent. Not a single shovel full of dirt has been turned over. If you won and became the Metro president, Metro Council president, what would you do about it?
Well, first, Lars, I want to say thank you for taking my call and thank you for your show. And your guest earlier, Josh Lee, is very, very helpful. I think, if anything, that $2 million should go to you because you provide more common sense to the subject than pretty much anybody. But just, yeah, I'm running for Metro president. So we, for people who don't know, Metro is the Portland regional government, and they play a key role in the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project. So whoever sits in that chair as president is going to guide the financial decisions and the funding that the Metro Council approves for the bridge or not. Now, I absolutely do not believe that there should be light rail, first and foremost. I want to go on the record of saying that. And, you know, I've been studying this a lot, and your show has been one of the best consulting sources. I think you're the best bargain for a campaign consultant that anybody at my level could have. So
thank you
for everything that you
do. Well, at this point, should we build the bridge at all? Because you know that the bridge that they've designed right now is predicated on light rail. It's almost as though, and it really is, light rail with a bridge as an excuse for building the light rail. So given that, given the fact that they don't have the 15 to 18 billion to build it, should they be building it at all?
Well, if people vote for my opponent, Juan Carlos Gonzalez, who currently sits on the Metro board, he's already proposed to have the light rail go through. He's on the regional transportation board, and he's tied in closely with TriMet. So the only way you're going to get the bridge built with an independent voice and without the light rail component is by voting for me, Chris Christensen. And I used to live on Hayden Island, Lars, and like you, I'm a boater on the Columbia River. I learned to sail out there and sailed my entire life. So I know the ins and outs and ups and downs and over and under of that bridge. And I know Hayden Island, and Hayden Island would be much better served by a bus line. It would be much less expensive. So there should not be light rail on the bridge. And I look at six precedents, right? I'm looking and studying the precedents. We've got the precedents. We've got the I-205 bridge. We've got the Markham Bridge. We've got the Fremont Bridge. All precedents of bridges that are built over a river in Portland at a much lower cost than what we're proposing. But there are two other bridges, and one that you brought up recently last week, which is very interesting, which is the one in Maryland, which went over budget, and they were using a progressive design build concept, which is basically, let's start the building, let's figure it out later. And of course, what happens is they got stuck betwixt in between, because now the bridge estimates have gone up. So that was, I thought, a good example, but it's turned out to be more of a cautionary tale. But there's also a project in Virginia called the HRBT, the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel Project, doesn't really, it's not an either or question. It's not a question of do we have toll lanes or not have toll lanes. We can have both. We can have free lanes, and we can have an expedited toll lane, which could support a bus line system. We can have up to 8 lanes of traffic over that bridge by using and looking at the precedents. And these other bridges are coming in at, you know, $3.9 billion, much less or much more in line with the original estimates that people had in mind and the available funding. So
I totally agree with you. Chris, thanks for the call. On First Amendment Friday, let's go to John. Hey, John, what's on your mind? John,
well,
if you've missed. Yes, John.
Can you hear
what's
me?
On your mind, John?
Well, I was calling in. Did you see recently about the miners that were being trafficked on 82nd Avenue?
Yes, I sure did. And they managed to bust that up and save those girls. I think it was all girls. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because unfortunately, you know, because of the female biology, and yeah, women are different than men. Women are more.
That'd be news to Ketanji Brown Jackson, but yes, they are.
Because women are more susceptible to opioid abuse, and I think you'll find out these women were probably, or young girls were probably being trafficked using drugs.
I would imagine that's the case. John, if that's the point, I hope that was the point you wanted to make. It is First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine any government here in the Pacific Northwest debating about whether or not it's appropriate to have hypodermic needles handed out to illegal drug users in the close vicinity of an elementary school, a middle school, or a high school? Imagine that. It's actually happening. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners is thinking over a plan to restrict the abilities of syringe service programs. Right now, SSPs, as they're called, like the Portland People's Outreach Project, operate by giving out clean needles and collecting the used ones from addicts. According to those who support this effort, the argument is they help reduce the spread of disease like hepatitis and HIV. You may still die of a drug overdose, but at least you won't get hepatitis. It also doubles, they say, as a way of outreach to those who are actively using drugs and offering them other services that might help them. The plan, if passed, SSPs would not be able to operate within 1,000 feet of a public school. Yeah, I think that's perfectly appropriate. Put the limitations on. Can you believe they even have to discuss this? But no, there are people like board chair Jessica Vega Peterson who are saying the ordinance needs some fine tuning and she'd rather have it happen at the state level, meaning she'd rather not do her job. Our poll on X today, should we end the 100-year ban on the USPS mailing handguns? They did it back in 1927 and they said you can't mail through the U.S. Postal Service concealable firearms. So it doesn't affect shotguns and rifles. It does affect pistols and the like. And they're now talking about getting rid of it. I'd be completely okay with that. On that note, on a First Amendment Friday, let's go to Scott in Roseburg, listening on KQEN. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks, Lars. Well, I wanted to talk a bit about the forgotten war, which is Ukraine. And perhaps you can solve a mystery for me about
it. All right. I'll do my best.
Okay. Donald Trump has said dozens of times that I've heard, if I had been president, it never would have happened.
I think that's accurate.
Well, it may well been good, because maybe you can solve the mystery.
Okay.
What great power did he have then that he utterly lacks now?
Well, except he doesn't lack it now. Do you notice?
Well,
what do you think?
Anything.
Hold on. What do you think he's? Well, he said it wouldn't have happened, but now that it has happened, if you're assuming the ability to prevent a problem is the same as the ability to stop the war that's going on now, they're not the same. In the same way that if I said if we designed roads, some roads properly, we could prevent accidents from happening. But if you said, well, Lars, if you can prevent accidents from happening, now that we've had a crash there and people got hurt, can you magically make them unhurt and make the accident never happen? The two don't necessarily equate to each other, do they?
Well, I agree, but they're not. It's not a perfect analogy.
Can I tell you why he can
sure,
say that?
Yeah,
and I said this plenty of times. At the time that Russia was massing troops on Ukraine's border, so Russia put close to 100,000 troops on Ukraine's border over the course of a year before they finally entered Ukraine. Now, do you know what Joe Biden did about that?
Nothing.
No, worse than nothing. Let me tell you why it's worse than nothing. Because the whole time he could have said to Russia, don't do it. If you do it, I will take the following actions. And if you continue to mass troops on the border, I will impose sanctions. I will do this. I will do that. He will do a lot of things that Donald Trump is very good at doing. He didn't do any of that.
Yeah,
and then, hold on. Oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't disagree about Biden's inadequacies, but Trump is doing nothing.
And about Ukraine? About Ukraine?
Yes, currently.
Can I ask you a question in aid of an objection? Whose neighborhood is Ukraine in, ours or Western Europe?
Well, whose neighborhood is Iran in?
Well, except I would counter with, is Iran a threat to the United States of America if they have nuclear weapons and if for 47 years on a weekly basis they have vowed death to America? And is Iran led by a bunch of people who, including the IRGC and the Mad Mullahs, who are part of a death cult? They believe that their religious fulfillment will be the return of the 12th Imam, the Mahdi. And they believe that it will come about after a conflagration that consumes both the United States and Israel. So unlike Russia, where we had mutually assured destruction, Russia understood if you attack the United States, they're going to hit back and you're going to be as badly damaged as they are. That makes the kind of standoff where both sides have an incentive not to start the war.
Patently absurd, because Iran has that same understanding. If they attack,
no, they don't. That's what you're not understanding. Iran's attitude is, if we ever get nuclear weapons and we get the ability to start a worldwide conflagration in which the United States is consumed, our religious destiny will be achieved because the 12th Imam will come back. This is their death cult.
You know, I'm not going to argue that point because I agree.
Please don't, because I'll win the argument.
That are crazy, but we're departing from the point about Ukraine, and
what about Ukraine? What do you want Donald Trump to do? Tell Western Europe it's mostly your problem, and he's also hit Russia.
We can do more than that.
What would you like him to do? He has pushed on Russia. He has pushed on Ukraine. He has pushed for a peace deal between the two countries. And in fact, as of today, they've just announced a little 3-day ceasefire. Now, I'm not sure whether
I understand that, but then tell me what
magic thing do you want Donald Trump to do to end the Ukraine war?
Let me do it then. Let me tell you, first of all, he needs to stop equating their positions. Donald Trump has never accused Russia of being the aggressor and the problem. He equates the two, which is not only disgraceful, it's inaccurate. And it's been contrary to American foreign policy since the end of World War II. So he needs to make that straight. He needs to.
And that would end the war. Destroy. Is that what you're telling me, Scott? That would end the war?
You're asking me what steps to take.
You asked me what he could do that would end the war. And you just suggested if he just called Russia the aggressor, that would end the war. I don't think so, Scott, but you're welcome to think that. And I appreciate a good naysayer call, especially on a First Amendment Friday. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and live on Portland CW.
The Lars Larson Show.